Welcome to SelfDiscoveryWisdom.com, formerly known as Self Discovery Media. On these podcasts, you're going to hear people who speak from the heart. They've taken the journey in life. Many things have happened to them, but they've changed it to happening for them. And in their strength, their courage, they've discovered their abilities and their wisdom, and they are now sharing it here with you. Do enjoy each show. We bring it to you with love and knowing that it's going to help you on your journey of life. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Mental Health Awareness, right here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. I am your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest all the way from the UK is Anna Daphna. We're going to be talking today about the fundamentals of healing your ADHD nervous system. And a lot of people do have that nervous system. And we're going to embark on a transformative journey into the inner peace with Anna. We're going to experience mentor and psychologist that she does with people. And we're also going to be unveiling the profound impact of everyday challenges on your ADHD nervous system. With over 2 decades of coaching experience, she simplifies the health risks and ties to an imbalanced nervous system, providing easy methods to check out on your body's autopilot. And for most supportive ADHD and executive function coaching, Anna shares 7 common pitfalls in the ADHD healing journey, offering practical tips for a smoother path. And so we're going to be talking about how we can bring ourselves calm. Now, I have ADHD children, and you would tell them one thing and they would go off and do another. And fortunately, they weren't so much on the hyper side of it, but they were definitely on the other. And I know for some people, it's quite a challenge to live with ADHD themselves or with children. And how do they maximize their happiness, confidence, and performance? This is what we're going to be talking about here today. Welcome to the show, Anna.
I'm glad to be here. I'm very happy to be here with you, Sarah.
ADHD, I remember, you know, my children are 80s kids, so I remember it was almost like a pandemic of it. Everybody was being diagnosed with it. But I had 2 children with ADHD and a husband with that, and 1 daughter with an OCD. And then I was on MO, and I said, "What's MO?" And he said, "Mother overload." but it's interesting because when they were engaged in something, there was no stopping them. They were incredibly in focus. But you give them a command that they weren't engaged with, and it just went right over their head. And it was very hard for them to concentrate on things that just really weren't of interest. Now, that could be said, that's just a child. So how do we draw the difference between understanding, I don't want to do it, so therefore I don't hear you, to the ADHD or the ADD of just not comprehending what you're saying and just unable to do it?
Some people with ADHD might have lower dopamine, so it's good to work with the treats, incentives, and rewards. So working towards something or having something to learn to after a task that can be difficult can help a lot of children, adolescents, and adults, because of it gives them dopamine. So that's very important for task initiation, sustained attention, and goal-directed persistence as well. And it's important for it to be discreet, immediate, proportionate, and motivating, of course. So it depends on, it's a matter of reflection. What does the child need at that moment? Is it a sensory dysregulation? Is it that he needs to play, etc.? How does he feel? Has he slept? Are they hydrated? Have they eaten well, etc.? Because sleep is so important. Hydration, diet, sports. For people with neurodiversity and generally, it releases the hormones for focus, etc. So what do they need? Is it a sensory thing? Is it an emotional thing? Is it a dopamine thing? So having that in mind,
And it's trying to navigate that, isn't it? Because hypersensitivity is in many things. And, you know, when they're hypersensitive, they're kind of almost vibrating off the chart, so to speak, and they're not able to cope with it because their nervous system is just on high alert. And that's when it's really, really hard to kind of pull them back in or to redirect them, because that nervous system has kind of got to a screaming point, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, and according to the polyvagal theory that is coined by Dr. Stephen Porges, American psychiatrist, views ADHD as a nervous system dysregulation. So that's a bottom-up approach instead of, for example, in coaching, a top-down approach. But the somatic therapies, including the nervous system, is a bottom-up approach. So according to this theory, it is a nervous system dysregulation, and people with neurodiversity are dysregulated, which means they have sensory dysregulation, emotional dysregulation. This is why they find it difficult to focus, they find it difficult to sustain attention, they find it difficult to prioritize things, organize things, remember things, have self-control, of course, be reflective about their work, be flexible and resilient. So that's one way to look at it, how we make sure that people with sensory sensitivities are being catered for and feeling grounded and safe, because it's all about safety as well.
We do not want you to reprimand the child. This is not the time to do it. They are not in control of themselves. For you to start reprimanding them is only going to throw that sensory off even more, right? It's like, this is the time for, let's find calmness. You know, let's breathe, let's go to a different place where it's calmer, let those nerving endings calm down. But, you know, the child isn't being naughty just to piss you off. The child is in trouble and unable to cope with the situation.
It's a great way to approach it, with acceptance, understanding, and just curiosity.
Yes.
Just bring curiosity to their autonomic state. And what do I mean by autonomic state? There are three states: the vagal ventral, when we feel open, safe, connected, ready to learn, to engage with other people. The adrenaline mode, which is fight or flight, which most people are at the moment. And then yes, the collapsed one, immobilized, stuck. Are they frozen, stuck? They feel hopeless, maybe depressed as well. So to see, bring curiosity. Where I am today in this autonomic nervous system state, and what's the story I'm telling myself? Why am I feeling, for example, in the stuck state, that the world is unsafe and I'm hopeless? Why? What's the story I'm telling myself? Just verbalizing that gives us power. Maybe we are on fight or flight, on adrenaline, on the sympathetic branch. I feel the world is chaotic. Just bring curiosity to that, and just take a minute to pause, and just, you can do that with your children or with ourselves as well.
Yes.
Of course, we can shift through the states, the autonomic states, I mean, the autonomic nervous system that is based on the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve that stems from the brainstem at the back of our head until the end of the spine. So it's important to know how are we feeling today, because this can change. How do we view the world because of this state? Because according to that, how we feel physiologically, this is how we perceive the world through our senses. And if our senses are not working in our favor, definitely we will view the world in not a positive light, let's say. And we can just bring curiosity to how we're feeling, what do we need to ground, and what's the story that we are saying to ourselves, how we can help. Not help, support ourselves to move through the states. Because we definitely need to go and fight for things sometimes. What's not good is to stay there.
Yes, yes. Do not forever. Stay in the fight.
On the fight and flight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree with that, and everything that you're saying. We're having a bit of a problem where we're a bit choppy now and again. But basically, right now, when we look at the world, there are more people that are anxious and depressed than there have been in a very, very long time. And you've got war-torn areas, you've got shootings in schools, parents don't know if they're going to see their kid again, the kids going to school looking at each other, who's going to lose their top. You know, there's so much anxiety out there that people are taking it on without even realizing they're taking it on. And anybody that has any form of challenge, I call differently abledness, but challenge, it is going to heighten those senses even more, because it's, they're already navigating, you know, a challenge where they, you know, have to be careful how they immerse themselves in things, be careful they don't get overwrought. And now we're adding even more to them. So it's double pressure on them, isn't it? And it's the techniques to kind of say, this is too much for me. I need to go somewhere quiet. I need to remove myself from the situation. Whether it's children or adults, we need to honor that, don't we? We need to honor their space.
Yes. It's very important to know what you need to bring that to your awareness. And also just to put some things in your routine in order to prevent that from happening. Because if we are feeling so much escalated, it's difficult to go back to balance, to homeostasis, say, to equilibrium, and to have this body and mind connection. Because what the nervous system is, if it's dysregulated, our body and mind are disconnected at the end of the day. So that will take some time, maybe an hour to calm down, but it's very important to start with the basics. So the high performance routines, like sleeping consistently, uninterrupted, have good quality sleep is the first pillar for both executive function skills, that are skills around organization, attention, memory, emotional control, and metacognition, which is self-reflection. That sometimes people with neurodiversity might find a bit more difficult because they can be underdeveloped. They take more time to develop.
So having a strategy is really important for
but
them,
also
isn't
with
it?
The nervous system.
We're getting a little cut
routines.
Off here a bit. So that strategy is really, really important in order for them to know how to manage their stress or manage their condition, no matter what it is. And we need to put something in place that they can activate on their own.
Yes. Yes, of course. If we run with a 20% battery, we just have 20% to deal with daily commands and to manage neurodiversity, because this is what we do. We manage the challenges, let's say, and we leverage the gifts. If it's 20%, how we can do that?
Yeah.
So it's important to work with full battery.
Yes.
As much as we can. Yeah.
Exactly. We don't realize actually how much is out there. I do this shamelessly every show, so please forgive me, but I actually do have a book out there of collective authors, 15 authors on our forgotten children, where we talk about disruptive mood disorder, where we talk about autism, and we talk about a few other things, because so many people are unaware what families are dealing with, what doctors don't know, what schools are absolutely clueless on, and what society as a whole, you know, immediately judges if a child is having a meltdown or an adult is having a hard time communicating or dealing with things. Judgment comes across immediately. They're bad people or bad parents or bad children, and they just don't, they're not educated as a public enough to understand this is a challenge this person is going through, and we need to be more compassionate about it and in understanding, and maybe offer a hand. Is there anything we can do rather than immediately going to the judgment road? Because that's not going to solve anything, is it?
That doesn't help anyone, and definitely it's not the child that needs to cater to fit the adult's need.
Yes.
But the adult and the environment that needs to cater for all neurodiverse people needs, either they are in school, university, or at the workplace.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think it's okay for people at the workplace to say, look, this is my challenge? You know, I have ADHD, or I have OCD, or I have this or that, to actually say, look, this is my challenge. If you see me kind of losing the plot, so to speak, or being overstressed, please be aware, and maybe even tap me on the shoulder and say, go and take some space. You know, so many people are brought up to feel ashamed of these challenges. And that again is a judgment as a society we've put on it. There's hardly anybody that goes through life without some form of challenge. This happens to be what this person has. if we actually include people into it, the school, the college, the workplace, the family, and say, please recognize my warning signs, and then invite people to be a part of that solution. Like, go and take some time, mate, or, you know, I'm sorry, I've pushed too far. We need that, don't we, in our society?
That's also important. I think the educational system is obsolete, 50, 60 years backwards.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Fortunately, not every teacher, not every school, but in general, I work with people with neurodiversity, and they feel depressed because they mask their ADHD, and it's so difficult to manage that load.
Yes.
And just please their teachers. And then they go home and they have meltdowns, or they have burnouts, or they have fatigue, or they feel useless. Mm-hmm. Most of them tell me, I feel I'm stupid.
Yeah.
I will never amount to anything good. So we work with that. But yeah, as we talked last time, it's just so difficult if the school does not cater to their needs to fit in a shoe that does not fit them, because it's so structured.
Mm.
Exactly. In a way that
does not fit. We don't want them to be kind of, oh, you're different. We just want people to be aware that they learned, everybody learns differently. Everybody has their different way of absorbing knowledge. And if the teacher knows that this is this person's challenge, this is not the person you're going to overload with. You're going to give them something within the parameters that they can cope. It's not putting them separate and saying, well, you're different and you're difficult. It's up to the teacher, which means it's up to us how we teach our teachers, how we support our teachers to recognize these different ways of learning.
Mm-hmm. Different learning styles, different attention spans, different educational accommodations. Maybe they can, instead of write something, they can have a computer, or they can present it orally or through a PowerPoint, something colorful, creative, even a video. So they are not shamed, but celebrated for their creativity.
Yes, that is something we need to do. You know, I've interviewed an awful lot of people on autism, whether it's the parents that brought it up, which they were told to go and put their child in an institution and go and have another. Instead, they decided to work with their children. And it is those parents that has brought about the awareness and fought for their children. But I've interviewed an awful lot of people with autism. And what I have discovered is that they're incredibly focused, incredibly creative, very selective of who is around them, and knows how to protect themselves. I think they're a great example to all of us of how we should live, because too many people take on everyone, and then we wonder why we're in static, you know, why we're in overload. And I think that being focused and being selective, having smaller groups around you, is healthy for all of us.
Yes, and they thrive at different things. For example, they can be limited, focused, very observant, very detail-oriented, sometimes very good memory as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so many different strengths to that. And society needs this diversity, because the world has changed.
Yes.
Why does the school system wants everyone to be the same? I don't understand this. And then when they get to college and university, people that are different thrive more. But how are they prepared for that?
Right.
Especially now. Especially now. Yeah.
There are so many burdens to kind of the university. There's the cost of it. You know, sometimes where are you going to live? They've got to work in order to go to university, and there's balance of that. This is hard on any abled body, but in anybody that has that challenge, whether it's ADD, HDD, OCD, any of those neurodivergent problems, it's adding an extra burden on them, isn't it? And it's like, I think we need to kind of cater. These are not throwaway people. Some of the most brilliant people in the world have been, you know, dyslexic or have ADHD or autism or anything else. They are geniuses. But it is how we lay the ground in which for them to learn, even at the higher level, at university level. Yet the university level seems to have a pattern of churning people out to be the high business people or the high this and that, and not necessarily the creative geniuses that come about their knowledge in a different way.
Yes, so it's important to put yourself in situations and environments that help you thrive. This is how you will thrive. And yes, a lot of famous people like Richard Branson has dyslexia, and Elon Musk has neurodiversity. And you see the diversity in thought and the innovation in business.
Yes.
So not everyone needs to go to university. They can do different things. It's just self-awareness and just believing in themselves.
I only discovered I had dyslexia when I was 21. I don't have it where I see things, but I put words in the wrong orders. And I, there's certain patterns I cannot see, I can't take in. And sometimes I can switch my words around a little bit like Yoda, you know. But I only learned it at 21. And I was a sickly child growing up. So in school, I missed a great deal. And when I went back, I couldn't learn the way they were teaching me. So basically, I was just the slow child. And they gave up. And this is because I didn't meet that expectation where they were churning people out to be in certain industries. And it left me behind completely. And I see this still happening today. As you said, our education is 50, 60 years behind. And I've interviewed and have in the book a lot of teachers that, you know, talk to this where they've given up teaching. Because if they've tried to teach the children in a way that the children want to learn, they get ostracized for not doing it the same old way. Same in the medical industry as well.
Yes, it's the curriculum and the standards and all the policies behind that. But there is the Equality Act as well, that we need more diversity, inclusion, and belonging as well.
Yes.
That needs to be put into focus as well. And curriculum need to be adapted. Many things can be done. You can work with projects, learn from different skills, different subjects in creative ways, and different curriculum for people with ADHD, specialized plans, all of that, and at work as well, specialized plan and supports.
Yeah, I mean, we see that, I mean, this whole expectation that children have got to sit for 6 hours at a desk and learn from a book. No, whether they have ADHD or not, children need to be active. And they learn by doing. There was a brilliant movie out of China many years ago called Not One More. And it was a rural area where this one man taught all these children. And then somebody got sick and he had to go away for a month. And one kid had already been taken by the government because he was a fast runner. So they were going to put him in the Olympics. And then another child, while the teacher was away, had to leave because his mother was sick. And they wanted to get him back. And all the things that they did to go and get him back included math, included strategy, included geography, included everything else. So when the teacher came back, not only had they got the kid back, they got themselves under the media, which then supported the school, which was very poor. But the lessons they had learned in the moment needs of having to learn it were profound, far better than ever they would have learned from the books. And I think if we teach our children to deal with real life problems and collectively come together with those ideas, what do you think we should do about it? What can we use? Who should we go to? We're teaching them skills they can actually use in life instead of useless information that we'll never get to use, like calculus. How many people need calculus?
And that we will forget after we leave school. Yes. One of the people I know has dyslexia. Her daughter also has dyslexia. She could not fit in the educational system, so she homeschooled her.
Yes.
She was a single mom, counselor, lived in a caravan. She was seeing her clients in the caravan. She was also with her child being homeschooled. Her child has had difficulty reading, as is the case with some dyslexic students.
I was 14 when I was about to read.
And the mom gave her daughter, bought her an iPhone. Everyone is like, why you give her an iPhone? She will be distracted. But her daughter learns how to read and write by texting her friends, just tapping into her interests. And now she's performing in London in theater. didn't fit in the mold of the
No.
mainstream system. She was homeschooled, had the support she needed, put in an environment that she can thrive, work with her interests, and learn how to read and write. And she's doing what is best, speaking and performing.
We need to get rid of this mold. You know, the same way we need to get rid of boxes that we like to put people in, right? You know, we need to start looking at each other as unique, not having an issue. ADHD, I have a grandson that has Down syndrome. It's not looking at them as something wrong with them. They're just differently abled. And we need to understand how they learn and immerse ourselves more in their world rather than demanding they come into our world, because we will learn something by being in their world and make them feel safe in our world as not being ostracized or ridiculed, but embraced for their differences. But if you still have humans still looking at people as black and white and this religion or that religion, you know, economic situation, rich or poor, or followers or no followers, if we still got this such divisive separation, then we are going to have a problem where, you know, this inclusivity is feels like it's far reach. But people like yourself, parents, right, and certain communities, they're the one that changed the systems. They're the one that pushed forward. The educational and government platform follows suit eventually, but it really is up to us to create those changes for them and show them how it works.
Yes. Yes. And it's the Great Reset. Things have changed since 2020, and the world needs different brains. So that's the perfect opportunity to tap into that. That's a long way still, but
gotta start somewhere.
Of course. But I speak with my clients, and all of them are so stressed doing things, and I have to think of that and this and this. And they are a human doings. I want to inspire them to be human beings, just to
yes.
be.
Just
to be.
Yes. We
There's
are.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing
Yes.
wrong with that.
Yeah. No, no. We are beings doing, not doing being. And, you know, we're being so taught to just do robotically, that we're not embracing ourselves as unique. We're all different. Every single one of us has a different DNA signature. And even though you've got 10 people all doing the same thing or the same mindset, they're all going to approach it in a different way. We don't want sheeple. We want those individual creatives that are willing to work together with other individual creatives.
Yes, and recognize their strengths as well, their gifts as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them think ADHD is a liability.
Yes.
And it can be like that if you put so much pressure to fit in a pigeonhole with one leg. But it doesn't have to be that way.
I mean, the hyper side of it is much harder. ADD, forgetful, haven't got an interest, not doing it. But it's when you get the hyper in there, it's that hypersensitivity. And that is the thing that is hard to navigate. If you've got a child that is kind of, quote, swinging from the chandeliers, or an adult that's swinging from the chandeliers, you know, they're out of control and they can't find their way back into control. So you really kind of have to help navigate them back into a place. What would you suggest is a good technique to use when you see a child or an adult out of control, and that, you know, that is kind and calm to bring them back down?
When they're out of control, just to work with the strategy that works best for them, how they ground. Do they need time? Do they need to have a drink? Do they need to have a snack? Do they need to have some time out? How are they feeling? Is it a sensory thing or an emotional thing? If it's a sensory thing, they can work with ADHD specialized occupational therapist that will work with a sensory diet for that person. Sensory diet is activities that pertain to the senses. For example, they can advise on what they can hold, what they can touch, so that they can ground themselves. Could be a fidget toy if it's not distracting, or a ring or blue tag or a pen, let's say.
Right.
What can they smell to ground themselves? Is it the rescue remedy from Bach flowers or something other sense that can has a grounding calming effect? What is it? What they can look at that is more calming? Is it a nice poster of nature? Is it having decluttered space? What do they need to listen to? Do they need to have noise cancelling headphones like Looms, or do they need to listen to repetitive music or gray noise or ADHD music or house progressive? It all depends.
And
And
we need
how
to
do they
investigate
need
that.
to move them into space? Yes, with an occupational therapist, ideally, that is specializing in ADHD. Or with a child, just bring the curiosity. Also, some type of movements are more distracting others, but particular type of movements can help with grounding. So it's good to work with a specialist around what type of movement is helpful. Yeah. Did I miss anything?
Do
No, I think
we
I've
see more
covered all
violence
of
with
them.
ADH children? You know, I know that with disruptive mood disorder, you know, more violence can come out because of the frustration and the feeling out of control. You know, with ADHD people, when they're kind of screaming at that high, do we see violence or disruption from them? Or is it just kind of hysteria?
Could be hysteria within the home, of course, if they have other antisocial traits, definitely could be comorbidity and could be. But yeah, I haven't worked with a person like that personally.
Right.
Yeah.
I know the disruptive mood disorder is a part of that. I hadn't heard ADHD. I just found it more that, you know, just trying to get them off the chandelier, so to speak, and calm down. And so you're saying that, you know, everybody has a different way. We all have a different way that bring us back to center. And we need to discover what that is. So your platform is to help people navigate. Is it an emotional thing? Is it hypersensitivity? How, you know, what is it that's going to bring them back down that they can do themselves or other people around them can help them do?
Of course, there is a very good book written by James Nestor called The Breath that analyzes the lost art of breathing, and which is also based on science, and is amazing book that I definitely recommend. And at the end of the book has breathing techniques that people can do in the morning routine every hour for a few minutes, because when you need to access that state, if you have not built your neural pathways like that, it's difficult to just do breathing when you're upset and just go back to center. It doesn't work like this.
Yes.
So breathing is a great technique. Mindfulness works very well with people with ADHD, but sometimes needs to be active sensory meditation or just being mindful, even for a few minutes per hour. How are they feeling? How does their body feel? What do they perceive in their space? Sensory orientation, what do I see? Am I safe? Etc.
What
I
about
work.
redirecting?
What do you mean?
Well, like, you know, kind of wherever they're at that point, trying to redirect them to something they can focus in on.
Yeah, if it's of interest, definitely it will work. Distracting, redirecting, asking questions or not speaking at that moment. Because if they're angry, they might lash out at
Yes.
that moment. Yes. Sensory trays are snacks that are already peeled and ready to eat. Some of my clients, when they do a boring task in front of the computer, they have it ready so they can start the task, sustain their attention for longer, and regulate their sensory needs by just having oranges, raisins, and healthy snacks. So that's another sensory strategy that has to do with taste, for example.
Yeah, I haven't heard about the taste thing with it, you know, before that. But that is a sensory, isn't it? Taste is a sensory. So you're saying by having familiar things that they taste kind of helps them focus it in on the taste and helps them redirect and calm down.
Focus to sustain their attention longer, to initiate the task, to complete the task. If they need to chew gum and they feel better with that, that's a strategy that can help managing things. But that depends on the person. Not everyone wants to chew gums, and some schools do not allow it. But if you say, I have ADHD, that helps me, it should not be a problem. I don't see it as a problem. Actually, I see it as support.
Yeah, and I think, you know, classrooms need to understand that if a kid says, I've got to get out of here, that you don't just look at them as they're just trying to get out of a lesson, but they're needing to go somewhere because they feel triggered and they know that they need to go somewhere. And we need to honor that, you know, because again, back to that regiment, rule, everybody in the box, everybody doing as they're told. We do a disservice to our children in honoring what they need when they need it. And you'll know if they're taking advantage of it or not. But, you know, you can see in the child or even the colleague at work when they're getting overwrought, this is the time you just say, it's okay, go and take a break. And I think that's a lesson for all of us, because whether we have ADHD or not, we all get overwrought or over tired or over stressed. And we all need to know, you know, that space, I have to take time out. It's important, isn't it?
It's the preparation and readiness to learn. If a person is not ready to learn because they feel dysregulated, upset, or they need something, it's our duty to developmentally cater for the needs of the person. Otherwise, we can be abusive without understanding it.
Yes.
Even as parents, as carers, and as teachers or professionals.
I mean, ADHD, as I said, in the 80s was kind of big, and people were given Ritalin for it, which then they discovered that really just dociled them so much that it wasn't managing, you know, it wasn't helping them calm down. It was more of almost like brainwashing them. Is Ritalin still used, or is there any different type of drug today?
There are many different types of drugs that the psychiatrists and their team prescribe, at least in the UK. Yes, they do prescribe still Ritalin, especially to children, but you can see what works best for you if you want to go to the medication route, and you can change the doses, the meds, but you need also to learn the strategies to,
yes,
to, you know, manage your ADHD, to accept yourself, because that I find the biggest challenge, to accept yourself and to believe in yourself and to love yourself.
Yes. Yes.
First.
You are not your condition, right? You're not your condition. You are a person who happens to have this challenge in life, but you are not the challenge. So don't let the challenge dictate your life. And it doesn't make you any less than. In fact, it can probably make you more, because you are facing this challenge on a daily basis, right? And if you have a day where you can't manage it, that's okay. You had a bad day. But the days that you can manage it, that's an extra bonus in looking at, I managed it today. It didn't get the better of me. So it's got nothing to do with your value as a person. It just happens to be your challenge in life to burden with.
Something to manage and something to thrive on. And that could be also your void and your purpose. You can make something out of it.
Yes.
You can excel.
There is no kind of cure for it, right? You know, it's all about management and being aware.
It's not a disease to be cured. It's a condition to be understood and accepted. So we can manage it. We cannot take away who you are. And part of you is that, but you're a person that has value.
Yes.
Gifts.
I mean, well. I look at my son with the ADHD. He runs a restaurant now, right? He runs a whole industry there. And that is requires a great deal of being on all the time. But he finds it best when he knows how to focus, what to focus on. And he doesn't let it stress him out. And when he does, his team's got him. It's okay, go and take a day off, you know? And they know. And so it's... I think it's, again, that recognizing that everybody has a particular stress level. Everybody has something, right? And we need to know each other of when that person needs, just go and take five, right? Go and take five. Or do you just need a hug right now? And, you know, and it's, I mean, that connection of hug, right? Heart to heart, it can have such an amazing impact on just making somebody feel supported and be able to help calm them down.
Mm-hmm. And hugs also stimulate the vagus nerve that we were talking about before, the nervous system, and help us feel better. Yes, and if it's an emotional thing, emotional reason why we feel upset, dysregulated, or we cannot focus or remember things, we can just think about who do we need to ask for support, what do we need to do to feel better, where we can go, where we can feel more regulated, and take it one day at a time.
Again, back in the day, because my children are 80s children, so back in that day, it was all very much about the drugs or almost kind of labeling the kids. And we're still seeing some of that. But, you know, understanding ADHD hasn't quite got the same stigma that it used to have. But does it still get in the way of people getting a job or, you know, having the career they want? Is it still one of those things? Or does it depend on what country we're in or what industry we're in as whether it has a stigma or not?
Some companies, from my clients' experiences, are neurodiversity unfriendly, and a few of them are neurodiversity friendly. It depends on the company culture and their policies, procedures that they have, how they approach that. For example, I work with a client now, and he tells me, "Oh, my employer hates me. She's so dismissive. He tells me this and this, and he feels that he's not good enough for this job. Mm-hmm. He's struggling." After a few weeks, he told me he got promoted.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are strict with themselves.
Yes.
And they are so difficult with themselves, but they are doing very well indeed.
Kind of they feel less than, or they've got more to make up. And they've got to be more than the general person to make up for their challenge, which is, again, no, you don't, right? I mean, we're always saying to people, no matter who you are, what's going on in your life, we want you to be yourself. Be yourself, step into yourself, always allow yourself to learn and to grow, but honor who you are and don't try and live up to somebody's expectation of what you should be, because that then becomes very detrimental to your own personal growth.
Yes, and the people-pleasing tendencies, masking symptoms, all do not work in your favor, for sure. Yeah. And it's also the rejection sensitivity dysphoria that comes with ADHD. That means that, oh, he looks at me, he doesn't speak to me, he hates me. People think it comes with ADHD, it's part of this. And we need to accept it. And sometimes people think that people are criticizing them. It's not the reality sometimes. They're overtly, the inner voice is so critical, we project it to other people. It's not the case most of the times, but it comes with a condition. And we see it with empathy towards ourselves and self-compassion. And we put it aside and say, okay, I hear you, voice or wounded child, but now I will do my best is a better way to approach it instead of just suppressing the voice.
Yes. No, if you suppress the voice, at some point it will be a volcanic eruption, right? It has to come out. And you know, I call it the kind of the cosmic nudge, nudge, wink, wink, or the cosmic 2x4. And if you ignore it, then, you know, backaroo, you know, that's coming. You've got to address it now. And I think that for a lot of people, with any form of challenge where, you know, I know myself, I felt less than. I didn't complete school. I'm not academically at all got anything. I failed school, in other words. And I didn't know I had this disability and I didn't know that I was learning in a different way, but I learned from life. And I think it's like, let's honor the way that we do learn. Let's honor the gift that we are. Let's discover the gift that we are. And whatever our idiosyncrasies are, whatever our challenges are, they are a part of who we are in what we're able to do. And I think where, you know, the challenge comes for people that are facing any of these challenges is they're looking for approval from people. Am I normal enough? Well, let's throw out normal. What is normal? Because if normal is this sheeple droid society of everybody doing the same thing, I don't want any part of it. I want to see people embracing the beautifulness of what they are as a gift and being that instrument that we want to hear and being unique, because that is what we need more of. We don't need any more droids out there.
This is what the school should teach, I believe.
Yes.
How to be yourself, how to be unique, how to have emotional intelligence, how to communicate as a leader, leadership skills, all of these skills that we later need in life, but they're not addressed enough, I think, at the moment, at least.
No. You know, again, you're saying, go back to the curriculum. Let's look at it. It's not, even for the bright children, it's not serving them for our tomorrows. Look at AI, look at industry, look at where it's all going. We're not preparing them for that emotionally, educationally, spiritually, in any way. We're not preparing them. However, My philosophy is all the children of neurodiversity, ODD, ADD, you name it, autism, even Down syndrome, any of that. These are the creatives. They're the people that, when we get behind them, see things that we don't see. And I believe that they're going to create the creative path for us all to follow.
That's beautiful. They can see things differently. They can solve problems.
Yes.
They can find solutions. So they are great assets to teams as long as we accept it, embrace it, and encourage it.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's.
In the UK, I work with a lot of students, and they have to sit GCSEs when they are 16, and they find it so difficult to study. So boring, so structured in a way that does not work for them, though. And I said to them, just push through the door. That's the first gate. When the gate opens, then in England, at least they have A levels, they have less subjects. And then it gets easier and easier because you can choose the subject that you want. You can choose one subject at university if you want to go to university that you're good at. It's just the perseverance.
But we still need to change the system, right? We really need to prepare our children, for tomorrow's world, and we're not, because we're still teaching them yesterday's world. And we need to look at our children and who they are today. I have another genre, raising our gifted children, and it is about looking. You look at a child before they go to school, and they are incredibly inventive and creative and connective. I mean, the way their little minds work. I've got two grandchildren, three and about to be one, and watching them in their own self-discovery is absolutely wondrous. Then we send them to school to conform, to be pigeonholed, to be restricted. And we need to look at our children and go, you are the gift. How do I nurture that gift? How do I nurture your journey into your self-discovery of what your ability is, what you are here to contribute? How do I give you the structure for you to take that ability into a format that is serving? And I think we really have to look at the way we're teaching our children today, and change our ways. That's the reason what this Our Forgotten Children book is all about, and there will be another one next year, because we need more people like you to talk about it and talk about these challenges that so many people are still ignorant to, or don't know how to recognize it, or judge people on. And if we're not talking about it, we're not being a part of the change. So it doesn't matter if you have children or not. It's a question of understanding that adult who's a child with ADHD and they're not showing off there right now. They've just lost control. How can you help bring them back down? How can you help them center themselves when they're feeling overawed? How can you be a part of the solution instead of being part of the burden through blame and judgment? I
Yeah,
think we.
because when you're part of the blame and when you're part of the problem,
Yes,
are you
absolutely.
here? Can you
Yes,
hear
yes.
me?
You disappeared for a moment, but you're back.
You're part of the. We exacerbate the problem, which is not what we want. And all behavior is feedback. Feedback of what you're doing is not working. I need something right now. I need something right now. And what do I need?
Yes,
I
exactly.
need to be accepted, first of all. I find the most, it takes more time to work on with my clients, to believe in themselves. This is what
What is the
strategies
age
can
group? What is the
work
age?
well.
What is the age group that you work with?
I work with adults, adolescents, and children as well, from 8 years and beyond. I work with professionals, business owners, as well, students in university and at school. Yeah.
Have you found in
So
business
yes, we
that?
work.
Sorry, we have a little lapse of time here, so we get to overtalk each other. Have you found in business that when you work with business people that they open their minds up so much more to the abilities of people that are differently able, that their understanding of people like that, that they let their guard down and they're more open and ready to work with people?
Yes, I find that they're more inclusive and very imaginative, very innovative. They think outside of the box. They're very creative, very successful. But they struggle with self-esteem sometimes. So this is what the first thing we work on, their beliefs. We eliminate unhelpful beliefs slowly with evidence. And then the strategies and the habits become part of who they are because they are proud of their identity that they are building, the new identity they're building.
I think, you know, that isn't just a, you know, somebody with challenges. I think everybody goes through that. You know, are we enough? Because again, this outside life is always demanding that we be more, which is a delusional. We are enough. And, you know, life is an inside out job, not an outside in. And I think everybody goes through that at some point. Am I enough? Do I count? Am I, you know, worth anything? But I think if anybody has got challenges on top of that, it's more of a double whammy.
Of course, am I lovable? And if it's coupled with RSD, rejection sensitivity disorder that comes with ADHD, that's out of proportion sometimes and can be debilitating. Yeah. And people can self-medicate because of that.
Yes. A lot of addiction comes about because of that. Talk about ADHD in relationships, because, you know, that can cause, you know, a spanner in the works in a relationship if they get out of control. So, you know, tell us a bit more about that.
It can be tricky. It depends on the partner as well, how understanding they are. Yes, it can be tricky with communication. For example, have a client who has a very supportive husband, but sometimes he struggles to pay attention to long sentences. For example, the husband thinks that she doesn't care about what she says. So there is miscommunication, but not because she doesn't care. It's because of her attention span, for example. That can be one issue. If you're not organized at home, can be another issue. So you can find ways around that. That comes with the conditions sometimes. Sensory sensitivities and emotional dysregulation can be issue when you have a family. So when you have children, that can be even more challenging to manage the whole family and to be a role model for the children and regulate and just have all these balances in check. When holidays come, they can feel overwhelmed sometimes. Structure changes. What does the child need? What do I need? Do I cater my own needs or everyone else's? So it's a lot of things to think about. Yeah, and take it one day at a time.
But, and sometimes you can find they're great playmates with the children, but they're not, you know, great to maybe at being the parents, so to speak, right? Because they love to play the mischief, but not necessarily be that support for the other spouse in being a parent, because, you know, it just entices their creativity and their playtime, which, you know, we do need to put on the other hat as a parent of structure and sometimes a little authority in order to keep things moving on.
What works best for each family. So yes, just asking each other what do they need, if they have a conflict, if it has been communicated correctly, if it has been resolved, if it has been unresolved, how they felt after they have this conversation. Would they say something different, something less, something more? Just having these regular check-ins and just checking on what each partner needs. Because the partner of the person that has neurodiversity also has needs and needs support sometimes.
Yes. And do you find that, you know, people with ADD or ADHD are attracted to other people who have it as well?
Sometimes not. But if they are, maybe they get along better or have a more chaotic household.
They either understand, but then how do they level each other out, right? Yeah. Chaos abundant, yes. You know, it is a challenge to bring up a child on any level, and especially in today's world. But when they do have these other challenges, you know, the first thing we need to do, there's no blame and no shame. Your child is not defected. You know, defective. It is all about strategies on how to manage it. And this is where you need somebody who understands it that can give you the tools and the skills. Most of the time is like, Are they in an ADD moment, or is this just being a child, you know, and you just don't quite know how to tell the difference? So we need someone like you to help recognize, you know, what the issue is. Recognize, no, they're just being a kid at that moment and they don't want to listen, or no, they're in ADD mode and they're choosing not to listen. And we need the help to navigate through it. You're not meant to do it on your own. I did it on my own, and believe me, I didn't do very well. We need people who don't have the judgment or anything, but have the skills and the tools to help them understand. And then it doesn't become an issue so much, does it? Because you know what to do.
Yes, you know what to do. You know how to build habits. You know who to ask for support. Of course, if you have a child and there is support at school, at home, and through coaching, that can work wonders because they can transfer and generalize the skills. This is what we want to be autonomous as well. But,
Yes. So somebody has a child that they maybe don't know, or they're an adult and they don't know, is this ADHD? I don't know how to recognize it. Yeah, I don't know what I've got, but there's something. How do you, what is your first step with them in identifying it and helping them through it?
if they want to go towards the diagnosis route, they can go through the diagnosis route. They can do it in the UK, at least privately, or through the public system. That takes longer. And once they have the diagnosis, they can choose to have medication or not. And then they can come to me for ADHD coaching or executive function coaching using polyvagal theory and holistic coaching as well to regulate the nervous system as well. So work with the coaching part. So the strategies, what they can choose to do, how they can shift their identity to believe that they can do it, how they can sustain the habits that they build, to understand and accept themselves. People with neurodiversity need more iterations, more repetitions to learn things. We need to know these things. 66 reiterations usually for an easy habit, not 21 days. So it's three times more. We need to acknowledge that, accept that, and just work with these things.
Be willing to try different modalities, be willing to immerse yourself in it. Again, no shame, no blame. It might be harder for you to kind of get around it, but the support is there. If that doesn't work, you try something else, but it's navigating how each individual is and what it is that's going to help them navigate for themselves.
And luckily, there are evidence-based strategies that can work with brains that are wired differently, pertaining to all of the executive function skills that are emotional control, response inhibition, that's self-control, working memory, task initiation, sustained attention, goal-directed persistence, planning, prioritizing, flexibility, time management. That I have worked with so many people with ADHD, but then we can tweak them together so they can use their ability to self-reflect and judge what works for them, and then they see progress over time. Blending these. How we can stimulate the vagus nerve through activities that they can do, like singing, hugging, having
Dancing.
dancing, connection with other people, animals, pets, sensory diet, because we said it's a sensory sensitivity as well, high performance routine like sleep, diet, hydration, sports, sunshine. Having ADHD specific coaching that addresses neurodiversity, not life coaching in general or mainstream, because you need to understand, and accountability. Somebody who understands this can be an asset for a person that wants to thrive with neurodiversity.
So, do you work with people virtually as well as in person?
Yes, mostly virtually. But I do have an office in Central London, and I work with one-to-one clients sometimes.
And you go into other organizations, businesses, and things like this, or schools, or whatever.
I'm open to deliver workshops around neurodiversity, executive function skills, how we can understand our nervous system and how we can regulate it through different means, activities like the Second Sound Protocol, for example. I'm a provider. That's a listening therapy that trains the middle ear to cues of safety. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, I don't know this. No, this is interesting.
It's an app that you download, has some playlists. If you like the playlist, that's a good sign because they won't be triggering, and the music is modulated to cues of safety. that regulates your vagus nerve. So that's one activity I do with some of my clients that want a somatic experience as well.
Wonderful. How do people get hold of you? What is the first step? Do you have a conversation with them first, or what is the process?
They can contact me through my website, annadaphna.com, and they can ask for a complimentary consultation where I can learn more about them and explore ways of working together.
And of course, for those that are listening, Anna Daphna is ANNADAPHNA.com. Are you on any social medias at all?
I'm all social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok,
All with your
all
name?
it. Yes, Anna Daphna with PH. I put it on my website and social media, but that's fine, you will find me.
Great, wonderful. You know, this is so needed, and you know, maybe you'd like to be in book two next year because this is what we need to talk about. We need to talk about, let's demystify, let's dejudge, you know, let's look at all of these particular symptoms and stop looking as if there's something wrong, but looking at how we can navigate through it and embrace everybody. I mean, we are looking at today so many people in anxiety, in stress, normally anybody. But when you have somebody with hypersensitivity of any kind, that is exacerbated even more. And we don't throw people out because they have, you know, challenges. What we do is we step up to meet those challenges and understand them and how we as a human race have to interact with people that are working with different challenges. So that's really
So
important.
let's redefine
Exactly. Thank you for the work that you do. As I said, I've interviewed many people with, you know,
Let's
kind of cross
redefine
things, but this is, I'm
and
glad that
empower
you're working
people.
that. Get me across everything. Yeah. I'm glad that you're working with specifically the ADHD and the ADAD because it's something
Thank you,
that
Sarah.
it gets clumped in with everything else. And I'm glad that you've separated it and treating it differently because then it doesn't just become an umbrella thing. You know, you're honing in on that and showing the skills and tools for that. And how many people that have it and maybe don't even know they have it. They're just labeled as bad children or bad people. And if they have the diagnosis, now they can have the tools and the skills in order to navigate it. So thank you for the work that you do. Right. And
Thank you, Sarah.
it's anndaphna.com, DAPHNA, Anna with an A at the end there. Please reach out and see what she's got going. And if you don't have ADD or your children don't, you know somebody that does. What is it that you need to learn more? Because the more we learn about this, the more we recognize it in other people, the more compassion and understanding we have, and the more we step up to ask, can I help? And if you know how to help, then that becomes even better. So we all need to educate ourselves on this because, well, what do you mean? It's nothing to do with me. It's to do with all of us. We interact with people with challenges. We need to know how to interact in a way that is not going to be adverse to anyone. So thank you, Anna, and to everyone else out there. Until next time, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life, and we know that through inspiration it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted, and we do hope that you enjoy the next show.